the buildup of soil phosphorus from fertilizer and runoff is threatening the water quality in our lakes and our watersheds. Hi, I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for the Larry Mueller Show on this Thursday. Glad to have you along on the Ideas Network. We have a couple of the authors here of a study out this month in the journal Ecosystems. It looks at the impact of phosphorus buildup in the Yahara watershed after decades of fertilizer and manure applications. Our guests are Melissa Motu. She's an environmental scientist and doctoral student here at UW-Madison. Welcome, Melissa.
Thanks for having me.
And we have Chris Kucharik. He's an associate professor in the UW-Madison Department of Agronomy and an associate scientist for the Center for Sustainability and the Global Environment. Welcome back to the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
And we'd like to hear your questions about phosphorus and what you're concerned about in the soils and watersheds here in Wisconsin. You can add your voice to the discussion at 800-642-1234 or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Melissa, we'll start with you. What is legacy phosphorus?
Sure. So legacy phosphorus refers to the phosphorus that has built up in soils and sediments in the watershed over time. And this primarily happens due to the overapplication of fertilizer and manure in our agricultural activities. So when we apply those things in excess of what the crops actually need, the phosphorus tends to build up over time.
And why are scientists like you paying close attention to this legacy phosphorus?
Well, what we've found in our research is that this legacy phosphorus actually has a direct impact on water quality outcomes. So in any given year, that stored phosphorus is making its way into our water bodies where it has a number of negative impacts.
Such as?
Low water clarity, fish kills, and presence of harmful algae blooms, so cyanobacteria blooms, which many Wisconsinites are familiar with. These can produce very harmful toxins that are dangerous to people and pets and other organisms.
And Chris, why is there so much phosphorus in Wisconsin soils?
Well, it really goes back to, I guess the best analogy I can make is as a checking account. You've got more credits than you have debits when it comes to phosphorus. So as Melissa had said, over the long term, we've had we have a lot of dairy here in this watershed. Those cows produce a lot of manure. Farmers have to find ways to dispose of that. A lot of it gets spread out on our soils. And really the trigger point is that plants require it for their growth, but they're not taking up nearly as much as what has been applied to the soil. So in the long term, the checking account builds and builds and builds. And that's why we have that overabundance, unfortunately.
And how has the use of phosphorus in our soils changed over time? How have you seen the soil change?
Well, the buildup of phosphorus is, extension folks will tell you that there's a recommended level that is required, and that's to satisfy the plant growth. So as time has gone on and we continue to grow crops and rotations and different types of things, we haven't really found anything that's going to be that silver bullet, that magic plant that all of a sudden takes up an enormous amount in a short time period. So that's kind of how we've arrived where we're at. We have cows producing too much. Plants aren't taking up nearly enough. Soils will continue to build, become saturated in their phosphorus content, to the point that leads to these problems that Melissa has been talking about.
And Melissa, you're the lead author in this new study on legacy phosphorus. Tell us about what you looked at.
Sure. So in this study, we used computer models that simulate the watershed to look at what happens to the lakes when we have different amounts of this legacy phosphorus in the soils and sediments throughout the watershed. So the idea was we wanted to see just how sensitive the lakes are to differing amounts of legacy phosphorus. So the first step in this process is we use the models to figure out how much phosphorus is currently there. And we do this through a careful process of model calibration and validation using the best available data.
Whoa, what does that mean?
It means we have to develop our models so that they are accurately representing what's happening in the watershed. So specifically, how is water flowing through the watershed? How is phosphorus flowing through the watershed? Making sure that the model is behaving appropriately and that it also reflects, it matches up with prior observations, like real-world observations. So
yeah.
We have to rigorously test our models in order to build confidence that what they're telling us is meaningful.
Yeah, so you start out with this baseline, and you were looking at the Yahara watershed, is that right?
That's right. Yep. So the Yahara watershed, right? That's where we are now.
Yeah, tell us about our Yahara watershed.
Right.
Describe it.
So our Yahara watershed is an urbanizing agricultural watershed, as we say. So roughly half of the watershed is comprised of agricultural areas. So we have a lot of dairy production in the northern part of the watershed. We have a lot of cash grain agriculture in the southern part of the watershed. And then right in the middle, we have our Madison metropolitan region, right? And also a key feature of our watershed is our precious chain of lakes, right? So Lake Mendota, Monona, Wabisa, and Caganza, which are all connected by the Yahara River. So that's our watershed. That's our study region. And that's what we were, that was our, the test lakes that we were looking at to gauge the impacts of legacy phosphorus.
So how is the legacy phosphorus impacting our chain of lakes, like Lake Mendota?
Right. So what we did was using our models, we tried different amounts of legacy phosphorus on the landscape. And we gauged what that effect was on lake water quality. So we specifically tested 5 different amounts of phosphorus stored in croplands. So this ranged from about 50% less than historical amounts to about 40% more. And we kept all the other factors in the watershed the same. So the same farm practices, the same climate. The only thing different in these simulations was the amount of phosphorus in the soil at the beginning of the simulation. So what we found was that the lakes are indeed quite sensitive to the amount of legacy phosphorus that's out there. So in one case where we reduced the amount of phosphorus stored in croplands by about 50%, this resulted in a 35% reduction in phosphorus delivered to Mendota each year, which we refer to as loading.
Mm-hmm.
So the phosphorus loading was reduced by 35%. And we saw a 25% reduction in lake total phosphorus concentration. And lake total phosphorus concentration is the key indicator we use to gauge water quality. So we want that total phosphorus concentration to be low.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, can the phosphorus be recycled, or can we do something with all this phosphorus?
Yeah, that's, I guess, the $64,000 question right now. And, you know, there is no quick fix when it comes to quickly getting that legacy phosphorus out of the soil, as I've been mentioning, through crop growth. But there is an effort now in the county that the county executive is putting money towards to actually dredge and remove sediment that's stored in stream and the river sediment that's been basically, I know, categorized as being over decades old. And that's one thing that could be done. It's very costly, but it'll buy us some time until maybe we can figure out other ways to start, you know, minimizing both the amount of phosphorus that's going onto the landscape and also reducing the amount that's running off into the lakes. Manure digesters are also kind of a hot topic right now. They're not perfect, though. They don't remove 100% of the phosphorus, but they are a means to at least provide some relief. Help and relief on that part. Yeah.
We're talking right now with Melissa Motu. She's an environmental scientist and doctoral student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and Christopher Kucharik, who is an associate professor in the UW-Madison Department of Agronomy. They are out with a new study recently published in the journal Ecosystems that looks at legacy phosphorus and what it's doing to our watershed, the Yahara watershed here in Wisconsin. You can add your voice to this discussion at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Melissa, how can we make the legacy phosphorus problem a higher priority? Because when we think of phosphorus, I just think of it as a farming issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, in some regards, it is a farming issue. But I think where we need to go from here is to start focusing our strategies on reducing that overabundance. And, you know, as a starting point, we could focus on getting crops the precise amount of phosphorus that they actually need. So, you know, just as a baseline starting point, preventing that buildup from continuing. Because as of right now, according to prior research looking at how much phosphorus is coming into the watershed versus how much is going out, we're actually still bringing in more than is leaving. So that implies that we're still in this accumulation phase. And as a starting point, it would be a good idea if we could get a handle on that and simply stop building up more phosphorus.
To plateau for a while and then figure out how to reduce.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's take a call now. Todd in Madison. Hi, Todd.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, you're with us. Yeah.
I fly fish a lot around here, and I've noticed over the years next to the streams, the farmers really spread a lot of manure, and they spread it really closely to the edge of the stream. I know there's supposed to be buffers. And there's something called best practices that they want the farmers to try to use. And I was wondering if there's any regulations that limit the amount that they're allowed to put on, or is it just like we'd like you to do that? Is there any teeth in any regulations that limit the amount of manure that the farmers are allowed to put on their fields?
Yeah, I don't know the, you know, exact specifications of all the regulations. I don't know if Missy, if you know them either, but I mean, we are trying to get them to practice best management practices, meaning at what times a year. I mean, we don't want farmers applying manure on frozen ground. So if you get a rainfall, that it runs off quickly, makes its way into a stream and then to a lake. I do know that DATCAP right now, I believe, is working on refining some of these regulations for nutrient management. I believe, though, in the Ahara that a large percentage, it's like 80-90% of the growers do adhere to some nutrient management plan, given the problems that we have. So there are problems, though, with, I guess, you know, the regulations and checking up on who's complying with those.
With all the regulations. Yeah, we're talking about the influence of phosphorus buildup in the Yahara watershed, this segment of the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, sitting in for Larry here on the Ideas Network. Hope you can stick around. The news is coming up next here on the Ideas Network. New study in the journal Ecosystems shows how the buildup of phosphorus is directly impacting our water quality. We have the lead author of the study with us, Melissa Motu. She's an environmental scientist and doctoral student at UW-Madison. And another study author, Chris Kucharik, is here. He's an associate professor in the UW-Madison Department of Agronomy and an associate scientist for the Center for Sustainability and the Global Environment. They're talking about legacy phosphorus seeping into the Yahara watershed and the ripple effect it's having on water quality and even places like Lake Mendota. You can join in the discussion about soil phosphorus at 800-642-1234. There's a line for you to talk with these environmental scientists or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's now go to Brian in Sun Prairie. Hi, Brian.
Hello. What I'm wondering is I take it that this settles. So does, like, the quantities in Mendota, are those more built up than the lakes downstream?
Yes. Yes, in fact. So Mendota is a much larger lake than the downstream lakes. It also sits upstream from those lakes, and it receives a lot of phosphorus and sediments coming from, you know, the upland areas, which do include a lot of dairy operations, manure spreading. So Mendota does hold a lot of phosphorus and sediment in its at the bottom of the lake. And in fact, that supply of phosphorus does get transferred down to the downstream lakes and is actually part of the reason why water quality is more impaired in those lakes and is, from what we've seen, harder to improve in those lakes.
What would that mean for recreational users of these lakes?
Well, it means that the conditions might not be as good. Mendota is a much larger lake. It has a lot more water to dilute that phosphorus. So in a shallower lake, you're going to have, you know, more algae. The water clarity is probably worse because it's just getting a lot of phosphorus delivered from those upstream lakes.
What was the most eye-opening aspect of your research? What was your aha moment, Melissa?
I think the aha moment for me was the idea that the actions that we've made in the past with respect to how we've managed our landscape really affects water quality today, and it's going to keep affecting water quality into the future. And in fact, the actions that we make today will also affect our water quality outcomes in the future. So it's kind of showing us, you know, on a karmic level, that what we do, what we did in the past really does matter.
Yeah. Chris, why should we be putting university research efforts into the problem of legacy phosphorus? Because this has a lot to do with farming, and some of the variables in farming you can't directly control. So, you know, what can university researchers do about this?
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, people value good water quality. It's high on their list, you know, recreation, fishing, tourism in Wisconsin. This isn't a problem that's just isolated right here in the Ahara watershed. You don't have to drive very far across the Midwest to encounter the same problem, unfortunately. So, I mean, researchers at universities are really being relied upon to come up with potential solutions. In our watershed here, over the last 30 or 40 years, there have been a variety of best management practices, new types of things that have been tried to reduce the amount of phosphorus loading going into our lakes, and the loading has pretty much remained the same. So we know that what we've been trying hasn't really been able to solve the problem to this point, so we need to find different, you know, outcomes that will be able to help improve conditions. And some of the work that wasn't a part of this particular study does show that long-term changes in land use and land management across the whole watershed can lead to better water quality. But it's going to take maybe 6 or 7 decades before we get over the legacy phosphorus issue, unfortunately.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for your call. Let's now go to James in Racine. Hi, James.
Hi there.
Yeah, what is your question, James?
So I've heard about some research, and I've seen some research with the Ohio State University and I believe the University of Wisconsin as well, about the use of gypsum as a soil amendment or a soil additive, that it ties up the phosphorus and allows the phosphorus to have the ability to not be soluble anymore and not have the ability to run off into our water streams. And I was wondering if Melissa, maybe you or any of your colleagues at the University of Wisconsin have looked into the use of gypsum. And as I know, there's also some work with the NRCS in Ohio and I think in Wisconsin on adding the gypsum as a best management practice specifically for this use. Wanted to know what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, thanks. That's a great suggestion. I don't have experience personally on the use of gypsum specifically, but soil amendments is indeed one approach to trying to immobilize phosphorus on the landscape and prevent it from moving into waterways, just as you were describing. Chris, do you have any knowledge on gypsum as an amendment?
Yeah, I mean, it's, James has pointed out, it's being tested in other parts of the country. There are some studies in the South that have looked at using as an amendment to different types of poultry litter that's being added to the soil. Yes, it does bind the phosphorus up. Some of these studies have suggested a 50 to 60% reduction in the amount of phosphorus coming off the landscape. I don't want to offend any of my colleagues here at UW, but I'm not aware of the wholesale use or testing of this. If any of you guys out there are listening, and you are, please call in so you can correct me.
But do we make one problem with replace one problem with another problem?
It's possible. I mean, you know, once you, you know, I'm guessing that the reason it's been suggested is that it has no potential bad trade-offs, you know, mm-hmm. with the soil, and that gypsum is readily abundant from a variety of different processes and byproducts. But there is potential until you study a problem for a longer time period that, yeah, it may, you know, create something else that is just not on our radar screen right
the
now.
Unintended consequences we don't know about yet.
Right.
Yeah. Well, James, thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. Let's now go to Layla in Milwaukee. Hi, Layla.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. My question to Melissa and Chris is more on the lines of the high-capacity wells and the anticipated, increasing amount of draw on the water table, and if any of their modeling showed how that's going to affect the runoff into the streams and lakes.
So in our watershed here in the Ahara, we don't have a lot of high-capacity wells that are a part of this modeling process. If we were going to model the Central Sands region, it would be a different story. And there has been work done in that region by folks at UW-Madison, UW-Stevens Point, and that have looked at the connection between land management and the water table up there. And there is a definite connection. But it's not something that's directly influencing what's going on in the Ahara.
Layla, thank you so much for calling in. Let's now go to Charlie in Holcomb. Hi, Charlie.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering how the phosphorus is produced in the cattle, as far as what I understand probably what they eat. But is there something possible that you could feed the cattle so you wouldn't produce the amount of phosphorus in the livestock? I'll take my call off the air. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, neither of us are experts in that, and we'd probably need someone from the Dairy Forage Research Center
right.
or Biological Systems Engineering to answer that. But I do want to throw out the story that connects us to the cows, per se. And it really revolves around a food that about 40% of us eat on a weekly basis, and that happens to be pizza. So this is a story I've been using more and more to help people understand, you know, from the cow to the table to water quality, how we make these connections. And in Wisconsin, about 85% of our milk production goes into cheese. That's a lot. And a third of that cheese production goes towards mozzarella, the majority of which ends up in lasagna and on pizzas. And since 1970 in Wisconsin, our mozzarella production has increased tenfold, and the U.S. per capita cheese consumption has tripled. So, unfortunately, you know, it takes a lot of cows to make a lot of milk and a lot of cheese. Those cows produce a lot of manure. That manure has to get spread out on the landscape, unfortunately, and, you know, that sort of connects people and what you're eating in terms of one type of food to water quality issues that are very local and very real. In terms of what cows are being fed and how to change that, I know that there have been some studies done in the mid-90s that we were just made aware of that were trying to better understand how to reduce that amount of pee in their, I'm sorry, in the amount of phosphorus in their diet. And it seems that based on the data that we have, it still hasn't contributed to a lowering of the phosphorus moving into our waterways. But a lot of that is attributed to the legacy phosphorus problem, too.
Wow, you can really drive it home with the pizza analogy.
Unfortunately.
Because then it all of a sudden reflects completely onto what I fed the kids last night that is linked to legacy phosphorus.
Yeah.
Melissa, are there any innovative technologies on the horizon, any thing that could help reverse what's happening here to legacy phosphorus and in our water systems?
I think that there are some really cool developments that are going to be up and coming in the next few years. I mean, we're starting to see this with the use of digesters, for sure, and this dredging project that Chris mentioned. So people are definitely in this watershed, which is really a hub of research and, you know, water quality efforts. I think we're really going to start to see some interesting innovation coming about in the next few years, and I'm really excited to see just how that's going to play out. Our research hasn't investigated in particular any, you know, cutting-edge technologies to handle this so far, but we're really looking forward to, you know, seeing what other researchers and perhaps, you know, some of these solutions could come from the private industry as well.
Your research is more focused on, hey guys, this is happening, we have the hard numbers here to prove it.
Yeah, we're interested in studying how the system works. Mm-hmm. We use our models because we really want to understand what matters in the watershed. How does the watershed respond to these different changes, kind of on a high level? So what are the effects of climate? What are the effects of land use, land management practices? And what can we learn about that? And then what is the best information from that we can pass along to decision makers and other actors in the watershed?
We're talking right now with Melissa Motu. She's an environmental scientist and doctoral student here at UW-Madison, and Chris Kucharik, who is an associate professor in the UW-Madison Department of Agronomy. They are a couple of the authors on a new study out in the journal Ecosystems that looks at legacy phosphorus and what is happening with phosphorus runoff in the Yahara watershed. Let's take another call now. Joe in Wausau. Hi, Joe.
Oh, I always thought phosphorus didn't move through the soil, and so I wondered how the phosphorus goes from the fields into the water. Is it in solution, or does it travel with the sediments? How does it get there?
Great question. Something we take for granted, Chris. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. It doesn't move through the soil. It actually moves over the soil in surface runoff. So surface runoff is what happens when you have saturated soils and then rain comes and then you get puddling, ponding on top of the water, on top of the ground, and then that water is going to move according to gravity. It's going to flow and eventually it's going to make its way into a waterway. So phosphorus moves in this process of overland flow. It can either be in the sediment form, as you alluded to, because phosphorus does bind to soil particles. So when you have erosion, erosion is moved through this process of surface runoff. You can also have phosphorus in the dissolved form as well, and that can be just washed directly into streams and waterways through overland flow as well.
What about snowmelt?
Snowmelt, yeah, great point. So snowmelt also contributes to surface runoff. Right, when your big snowpacks, your snow mm-hmm. piles start to melt, that produces a lot of water. Mm-hmm. If the soils are saturated or if they're still frozen, you can get a lot of runoff generated from that. And that also can move phosphorus into the waterways. In fact, that's a really big driver of phosphorus transport in the watershed, is when the snow does melt in the springtime.
Joe, thanks so much for calling in. Let's now go to Dan in Green Bay. Hi, Dan.
Hi. In wastewater treatment, there's a process called flocculation. And in this process, you're using a chemical to attract the phosphorus, and then it becomes a clump. And then you can harvest the clump and use it for whatever purposes you want. And on every farm, there is a manure containment where all the waste of the farm goes into that. And that could be treated at site so that the phosphorus never gets into the waste that's spread on the fields. It's harvested out through the flocculation process.
Chris?
I don't know a lot about that process. Some people have even talked about additives to lakes themselves to tie, you know, bind up that phosphorus and to remove it. I guess my question would be, what do we do with that material once it's sort of coagulated together? We've got to move it somewhere, do something with it. So do we
build a phosphorus mountain?
Yeah, ship it to Illinois, or I don't know. But it's a good point to bring up that there is technology out there.
Dan, thanks so much for calling in. Let's now go to Richard in Ettrick. Hi, Richard.
Hi, great show. I came in a little late. So my question is, though, on large dairy farms around our western part of the state use sand as the bedding for cattle, and then that bedding is then goes into the lagoon or pit, and then it's pumped out onto the land when it's spread. Now, what would be the long-term effect of all this sand going on to, you know, heavy loam fields and that sort of thing?
I would say that there's the probability that you're going to change the textural composition of the soil over long time periods, and in a way that does a couple of things. It would probably increase the infiltration rate. Given the pore size of a sand is a lot larger, it's a lot easier to move water through a sandier soil than it is to a loam or a clay loam. And then also you would have reduced water holding capacity of the soil. So it would not just start to change the biogeochemistry or the cycling of nutrients, but it would also start to change maybe the plant growth and response to environmental conditions, too. So there's a variety of things that could happen with that type of a practice.
Richard, thanks so much for your call. Let's now go to Richard, another Richard, in Algoma. Hi, Richard.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. A lot of good talk today. Love the talk about phosphorus, runoff, surface water, groundwater. And here's a question for your helpers there. Is anybody looking at the pharmaceuticals and the biologics and all the other farm chemicals that have been used on the farms for decades now, and it's in the food, the GMOs, all of this stuff is ending up floating with the water into our rivers and streams and being deposited on the in these streams. What effect is 20 years or 30 years of these biologics, what is it having? Who's testing for this stuff?
Gosh. Bring up some really good points. For sure, you know, water quality means a lot of different things to different people. You know, we're here talking about phosphorus and the impacts that phosphorus has in freshwater ecosystems, but certainly many chemicals from agriculture, from industry, find their way into our water bodies, both surface waters as well as groundwater. And while I can't speak specifically about, you know, pesticides and pharmaceuticals, I do know that there is a lot of research taking place within Wisconsin to look at some of those impacts. So I wish I could provide more specific information on that, but
Legacy phosphorus is one of many, many concerns that is happening here in water.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think the problem is that it might be one of those cases of a bit too late when we actually learn and realize maybe some of the consequences of what has been going on. One of those problems that, oh, gee, now we've got this issue and it's attributed to decades of this being applied. So, but there, as Melissa said, there's people studying these things. It just wasn't part of specifically of what we're doing.
Richard, thank you so much for your call. And Melissa, I'm going to give you the last word here on legacy phosphorus. Why should we care?
I think we should care because it's important to keep in mind that what we do right now in managing our landscape is going to make a difference in water quality in the future, because this phosphorus stays around a long time. So we need to be really careful and mindful about how much we're applying, how much we're removing, if we're letting it build up, and then what we're going to do to prevent that from happening.
And where do you go next with your research very quickly?
So this is the first study of several that we have that are going to be coming out in the next few years. This has kind of been taking a historical approach on water quality, but we do have more research that will be investigating some of the effects of climate change on water quality, as well as some possible future outcomes of water quality under some provocative yet plausible future scenarios of our watershed.
And we'll be waiting for those. Melissa, thanks so much for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Melissa Motu is the lead author of a new study in the journal Ecosystems. It's titled The Influence of Legacy Phosphorus on Lake Water Quality in a Midwestern Agricultural Watershed. She's also a doctoral student here at UW-Madison. And Chris, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Chris Kucharik is an associate professor in the UW-Madison Department of Agronomy. Thanks to Brandy Funk for on-air production today and to Dave Potras for technical direction. This is the Ideas Network.